Through our years of past carelessness, we incurred a debt to nature, and now that debt is being called.
I'm Rachel Waldholz.
And I'm Ellen Chenoweth.
And this is the beginning of the Endangered Species Act.
The great question of the 70s is, shall we surrender to our surroundings? Or shall we make our peace with nature and begin to make reparations for the damage we have done to our air, to our land, and to our water?
That's President Richard Nixon in 1970 laying out an ambitious environmental agenda.
In his 5.5 years in office, Nixon signed the National Environmental Policy Act, the Clean Air Act, the Clean Water Act, the Marine Mammal Protection Act, and in 1973, the Endangered Species Act.
For those of us who associate the Nixon administration with Watergate and Vietnam, this is a little surprising.
Well, and it would be more so if you knew him.
That's Lee Talbot. He was one of the architects of the Endangered Species Act.
President Nixon was not what one could call an environmentalist.
But he was a pretty good politician, and he recognized that there was this groundswell of public support for environmental action. Remember, in the late 60s and early 70s, environmental issues are suddenly in the news.
When people talk about this era, they always bring up Rachel Carson's book Silent Spring.
Right, and that comes out in the early 60s. In 1969, there's the Santa Barbara oil spill, one of the largest in U.S. history. That same year, Ohio's Cuyahoga River catches fire, becoming a national symbol of polluted waters. The first Earth Day is organized in 1970.
Here's all of the constituents are requesting government to do something about the environment, and the great majority of people in Congress didn't really know what environment was.
Nixon gave his staff wide latitude to pursue environmental policy, and they ran with it. Talbot was a senior scientist with the President's Council on Environmental Quality. He knew he wanted to pass a major endangered species law, but he decided to push first for what became the Marine Mammal Protection Act.
And this is the law that makes it illegal to hunt marine mammals, including whales.
It was evident to me that the public didn't really connect with, say, a cod, but they could get excited about a marine mammal. So it seemed to me that we ought to make a major push on whales, and then hopefully go beyond that later on.
And this was a bill that wasn't very popular with the commercial fishing industry or with the federal agencies. But the main obstacle was actually the Department of Defense.
And can we just pause and note that as recently as the late 60s, the Department of Defense was still using sperm whale oil in its weapon systems?
Right. So the fact that some people wanted to ban commercial whaling was literally a matter of national security.
It turns out sperm whale oil could handle really high temperatures and pressure. The military didn't think they could replace it, but Talbot thought differently. He describes a meeting he arranged deep below the White House between representatives of the Joint Chiefs and folks from a couple of the major chemical companies.
I said, well, is it true that it's not possible to produce this? And they both said, no, we can do it. And I said, well, how long would it take you to get it in the adequate amounts? And one of them said, 2 months. The other said, 6 weeks.
And the Marine Mammal Protection Act passed in 1972. On to the Endangered Species Act. Talbot and his colleagues had learned from earlier endangered species laws how easily they could be circumvented. They were determined that this time the law would have teeth.
What we did was take the administration bill and I went through the whole bill and took out all of the weasel words. So, for example, where it said the secretary may take some action, I changed may to shall. Where it said insofar as practicable, I just took that out. And the net result is a remarkably tough piece of legislation.
The Endangered Species Act passed the House 390-12. It passed the Senate 92-0.
Ted Stevens voted for it. Don Young was a freshman representative at the time, and he voted for it.
And many legislators, many people were surprised when they found that it, you know, gave all species the right to exist.
That's Joe Roman. He's a conservation biologist, and he's written a lot about the Endangered Species Act.
And, you know, that was what made it so radical and so important.
So there are a couple things that make the Endangered Species Act so powerful. The first is this protection for habitat.
Because the law says you have to protect the species and the ecosystems they depend on, you can't just keep them in zoos. That's really the power of the ESA right now, is those critical habitats.
The other big innovation is including what's called the precautionary principle. At the time, if scientists said harvesting a particular species was driving it to extinction, the burden was on scientists to prove it.
So what I did was rewrite it backwards and put it so that the onus is on those who wish to harvest to prove that it won't threaten them.
So this law was incredibly ambitious. But the question is, has it worked?
If you frame the question, if you judge the success of the Endangered Species Act by the amount of species that have recovered, it's not looking so good. There are only about 30 species of the thousands that have been listed that have been recovered and removed from the list.
But there's also another way to look at it.
If you see the ESA as a law that's intended to prevent extinction, it's been successful in that estimates are that the extinction rate since the passage of the Act declined by tenfold.
It's true that they're still on the list, but they're not extinct. And that's a big factor.
And for that, we can thank Richard Nixon. In Sitka, I'm Rachel Waldholz.
And I'm Ellen Chenoweth.